Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon. And this week's episode with Maverick McNeely, newly professional Maverick McNeely, is of course brought to you by Ogio, the best golf bags, backpacks, and travel bags in golf. And good news, we're doing an Ogio giveaway on the Clubhouse Twitter account. Follow that at the Clubhouse Pod, and you'll have a chance to win a new bag, a new backpack, and a new travel bag, all courtesy of the fine folks at Ogio. Maybe you want to carry the best backpack in the game and rock a Renegade or a Mutant travel bag so your golf clubs travel in style in your next golf and adventure. Ogio is the best, and you can save 20% at checkout using the offer code THECLUBHOUSE, no spaces, at ogio.com, O-G-I-O.com. Check it out. Follow that Clubhouse Twitter account, and you'll have a chance to win as we get set to give away all three of those things, a backpack, a travel bag, and a golf bag. That is a good prize package, and that is brought to you by Ogio. Also wanted to let you know that golf is full of strange people in strange places. Hello, you're listening to one. Their stories make adventures in golf. Documentary filmmaker Eric Anders Lang, one of the best in the business, takes viewers on another tour around the globe searching for the craziest, most intriguing stories and personalities in the game. His season two travels takes him to Southeast LA, where he attempts the hole-in-one challenge in search of his first ace ever. Welcome to the club. He goes to Scotland in search of a lost course designed, of course, by old Tom Morris. And he goes to Bandon Dunes to compete in their seventh annual Summer Solstice Challenge, where he plays 72 holes in one day, all four golf courses in one day. Make sure you check that out. Adventures in Golf, Eric Anders Lang. He does an unbelievable job. One of the coolest people in the sport. I mentioned Maverick McNeely on the podcast coming off the Walker Cup win, but I asked on Twitter earlier this week about your best club-breaking stories, and the response was so great that I had to bring on a buddy of mine to chat about our personal stories, because we've really been together for a lot of, I'll say, interesting moments together on the golf course. So I wanted to bring him on right now just so we could chat a bit about our experiences, as we mentioned, a couple of our favorite ones that you guys responded on Twitter.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
So on Wednesday on Twitter, I don't know if you saw this or not, but I just was kind of messing around and asked people. I said, you know, it's Wednesday, nothing's going on. Send me your best club-breaking stories. And I got some just unbelievable responses. It was one of the more fun moments I've had in years on Twitter. And it brought up one of my good friends from back in my high school days, John Hodges, who, for some reason, I guess when we're together, we either both lose our minds or somebody else loses their mind. So I wanted to call John and have him on the line. And John, you and I had the chance to play some high school golf together. We played a lot of golf outside of that. You caddied for me in some events. And I would say you and I aren't really angry types of people, but for some reason we've definitely lost our minds on the golf course before. And I wrote this on Twitter. I want to start with this. You had an experience when I played with you one time where we were maybe five or six holes in, and I think you had to tee off with a four iron because everything else is gone.
Yeah. So, generally pretty, even keeled, but something about those clubs not behaving kind of sends me over the edge. And I remember being in high school playing the tournament with you, and, I think things were going along just fine, maybe one over or something, and the clubs just weren't behaving. And yeah, I think I sent a handful, two or three of them, to their grave that afternoon.
Yeah, well, I think it was like there was like a driver you broke. I think you might have broke your three wood, and I remember you tried to punch out right on two or three at this course in East Texas called Cypress Valley. I don't even think it's called that anymore. And I think that four iron also might have ended its day as well. And at some point, I think when you're hitting five irons off the tee, that was it. I mean, you had nothing left to go with.
Yeah, I think a few of them made their way to the injured reserve after a couple of sideways shots. I think it was just a rough day. And I think that part of the deal was I think I just wanted to beat you. And I think you must have smoothed one out in the fairway. And then I didn't, and so it sent me over the top.
Yeah, that was it. Well,
definitely the club's fault.
Yeah, it was the club's fault. Well, I mean, the funny thing was, years later, you were, I think you were in college at this point, and I was playing, and I got into some AJGA major or something. I think I might even have qualified for it.
Right.
But you were going to come to Dallas and help and caddy for me. It was a four-day event if you made the cut. And we had a couple of good days, but there was a moment where you still to this day claim it's the maddest you've ever seen somebody on the golf course, because I wasn't mad at all. And I was going to let you kind of explain the story.
Well, yeah, and it was a 4-day event, and you'd played fairly well the first couple of days. But I remember, I think it was early on the back nine. I know you had missed a short putt, and maybe another tee shot went sideways. And I guess you thought that 2-iron wasn't behaving right. And so I did a poor job of keeping your head in the game, admittedly.
Yeah, you're really your fault.
But I honestly didn't think you were that upset until I saw you walk over. I've never seen anybody so angry that they didn't use violets. You just walked to the fence, you know, the out of bounds there, and calmly dropped. Didn't throw, toss, any of it. Just dropped it over the fence. I've never seen anybody dispose of a club so calmly.
It wasn't. I didn't break it. I didn't chunk it. I laid the 2-iron over a fence, dropped it, and just continued on my way.
You could have dropped an egg that softly.
I think you and I have talked about the 2-iron drop more than we've talked about anything. Well, and the last one I wanted to bring up, and then I'm going to read you actually a couple of these responses because I know you'll enjoy them.
Okay.
The last one I want to bring up is we were playing Marshall Lakeside, which is where my dad was a member. It's a 9-hole course in East Texas that you play the same 9 holes twice basically with different tee boxes, so a couple of the pars are changed. We were playing with a guy, and I'm not going to say his name, but he was, to say he was a hothead is might be the understatement of the century. This is a guy that had all the talent in the world. And I'm saying, I mean, this was a guy that, I think he won regionals as a freshman in high school. And I mean, 5A in Texas is pretty impressive to do. This guy was unbelievable, but he was also, he could lose it quick. The funny thing was we were playing with him, and I think your brother Tom was playing with us as well. And
that's right.
He was not even mad. He was more joking around. And this hothead guy threw a wedge, and it got caught in a tree. And what do normal people do? They drive up to their house and get a whole set of clubs and come down and try to throw more clubs to get the one he got in the tree lost. Can you remember, was it like 8 clubs he lost in that tree that day?
I think it was nearly a full bag of golf clubs that we wound up decorating this pine tree with. He threw one, and you know he was having a rough day, so he couldn't even throw his clubs right, and so even his sand wedge hooked into a tree. And next thing you know, he comes back with like a barrel of clubs, because he lived on the course, I think, right?
Yeah.
And he comes back with these clubs, and he just starts throwing them at this sand wedge, and none of them are coming down.
Well, you and Tom were sitting there going, we're going to come back out here tomorrow and look and see if a storm blew these things down. I mean, they were not old clubs. They weren't bad golf clubs. He just wanted to get that wedge down so bad that he was going to sacrifice an entire bag of year-old irons, like Mizuno irons or something good.
Well, Tom and I are standing there at the, you know, watching this go down, and we're thinking, this guy's throwing $100 bills into this tree.
Well, it was,
and in the back of our mind, we're thinking, if we come back when it's dark, we can cut this tree down.
Yeah, this thing can go down. Well, this is a guy too that I was playing a high school tournament, and I didn't play many high school tournaments with him because he ended up stop playing a little bit. But I remember he was like 5 holes over, and he was walking down the hill with his bag on his back, and he was joking around. And he started doing barrel rolls down this hill with his bag on his back. And, I mean, the bag's bending. I mean, the clubs had to have been as close to being broken as possible. But this was just the kind of guy he was. And the funny thing was he wasn't even that mad. He wanted to get his club down, and he ended up losing 10 clubs or something in this tree. But I had to have you on because you were such a perfect person to talk about this. I'm going to read a couple of responses I got. Because, well, I mean, like I said, if you haven't checked this out, read the thread. It's pretty good. But this guy said, and for some reason, John, like half the responses were people that went to Disney World. And I'm like, you guys are this angry at Disney when you're playing golf? This guy Matthew
Happiest place
said,
in the world.
Yeah, this guy Matthew said, a guy I know boned a wedge, threw it at a tree, and it broke at Disney. After putting out for a five on a par three, he went back and urinated on the broken wedge. So that's taking it to an extreme. Daniel said he broke his driver in a scramble, double eagled the hole.
Oh my gosh!
So, I mean,
wow! Talk about bounce back.
Yeah, that's broke your driver. One of my favorites was from this guy named Lucas. Said he was doing mini golf at Disney again at Disney. And he said his buddy broke his putter in mini golf. I mean, that's when you might need to just take up a new sport if you're doing that stuff.
Right, right. And I'm not gonna fault a guy for breaking a putter, but those are good.
Yeah, and my last one I'm gonna do, just because I think this really encapsulates guys that break golf clubs, because you're so mad for such a short amount of time and then all of a sudden you feel like an idiot. He said his friend broke every graphite Mizuno iron he had, went to the pro shop after, and ordered the exact same set, $1,400. That is golfers in a nutshell.
That's right. Goodness gracious.
Well, John, I appreciate you coming on. I had to bring up the couple of broken club stories that we had. I will reach back out to you, but thank you for jumping on. And, you know, the nice thing is we don't break clubs anymore. That's a thing of the past.
Yeah, those like I say, throwing those $100 bills away—that's a thing of the past.
Yeah, and also, kids, if you're listening to this, don't break golf clubs. It's not worth it. It's stupid. And if you are going to break it really good. Like, don't half break it, and don't set a 2-iron over a fence. If you're going to lose the club, really, really lose it. John, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, hey, thanks for calling.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that. Breaking golf clubs is really idiotic and stupid, but it is something that a lot of us do for whatever reason. We're not very smart. So always fun to hear those things. Everybody that sent in responses on Twitter, thank you so much. It was entertaining. I had more people text me and say that they enjoyed that thread than I've had in years. So you guys are the rock stars. Also, stop breaking golf clubs because it makes no sense and it costs you a lot of money. Okay, that's enough club breaking stories. Let's get to a guy that does not break golf clubs. He is a mild-mannered young man that is about to turn professional, and he's going to make his first start at the Safeway, and had a great chat with Maverick McNeely as he finishes up amateur golf and get set to take it on with the pros. So here we go, Maverick McNeely here on the Clubhouse. And we now welcome into the Clubhouse a member of the U.S. winning Walker Cup team, and also a fellow that now is a professional golfer, which I'm sure still sounds kind of weird to hear. Maverick McNeely. Maverick, I appreciate you taking some time, and I ask everybody the same question, whether they're a player or otherwise. What have you had to eat today?
Currently nothing. Maybe just a little bit of toothpaste. That's about it.
It's 8 a.m. I understand. It's early on the West Coast. Well, this week has been, I'm sure, crazy for you. Second Walker Cup. This is the first time you've left a victor. What's the last 10 days been like? I mean, it's had to have been a whirlwind of emotions, considering it was in L.A., it was in California, and you guys went up to the big lead, and you were able to have kind of a career week at a Walker Cup.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think the fact that, you know, I woke up half an hour ago and I've been sleeping about 10, 11 hours a night shows how much of an emotional and physical high it was that whole week. It was absolutely amazing. And I actually, on my off day, watched all the coverage start to finish. Just, you know, I can only binge watch golf. And it was awesome. It was so fun, especially to watch and see my other teammates play. Because when you're playing, you're so focused on your own match. It was fun to see all their matches too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've played on a second Walker Cup team. You played 2 years ago. You were the only player out of the 20 that had done it. What was the experience like when you looked at this past week compared to the one 2 years ago when you were going into it, you know, as you know, a very, you know, fresh, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed type of player? Now you knew what to kind of almost expect in a way, and nobody else did. How was that experience different this time compared to 2 years ago?
Well, I'll tell you what, Sunday night was a little different. that was probably the first big difference. We may or may not have thrown cap in the pool, but no, it was all in good fun. But it was a lot more fun having that big silver trophy at the end of it. But, you know, for me personally, I think I was a little bit less nervous, a little less scared, a little more confident, and a little more determined. And that's a great combination for playing good golf. And then as far as the team goes, I think this team was just a lot more prepared because we knew what was coming. I think everything about the weekend at Lytham was difficult to prepare for. It was a complete opposite wind direction. I was hitting 7-iron on number one the entire week and had to hit a stinger 4-iron the first shot of the tournament. And it was just a type of golf that we weren't used to, and the GB and I side played awesome. And I think we were a little more prepared this time around. We were a little more accustomed to the style of golf, and I think we all had a chip on our shoulder that we wanted to get this cut back and do it in big fashion too.
Yeah, I mean, did you feel pressure, or did Spider Miller come up to you at all and say, hey, I mean, you're going to have to kind of take the reins here? You're not the oldest guy on the team, but you were the one that had the experience before. Did you feel that at all, that you had to kind of take the lead and show some of these younger guys the ropes and what to do and how the week was going to feel?
More than that, I just wanted to win it for those guys. I wanted those guys to, you know, because everyone on the team is an amazing player, and that's why it's so hard to pick the team, and it's such a difficult selection process that everybody knows what they need to do to prepare to play great golf. It's just that the Walker Cup is unlike any week we've played before. It's so much golf in a short period of time with such a big buildup, and I just wanted those guys to have the best chance to prepare to play the golf that they did end up playing this weekend, which was incredible. And it, you know, I thought I could never tell them what to do and how to do it, because like I said, everyone's a great player in their own right and knows what they need to do. I just, if there was any value I brought, it was understanding kind of the mechanics of how the week worked for us. It was a long, there's a lot of stuff we had to do, and then it was all of a sudden 72 holes in 36 hours, and just, you know, helping the guys appreciate what the weekend would look like so that they could structure their own preparation around that. And they did an awesome job of it.
Yeah, I mean, you, Doug Gim, Colin Morikawa, no team had ever had three guys go 4-0-0, and you guys all three did that, so that was cool. I mean, I got a chance to chat with you a lot throughout the week because of that. I mean, you kept winning your matches, and so you had to talk to me, and something that struck me, something I noticed with you, was a lot of amateurs are shy and they might not, you know, have that kind of presence in front of a camera. You have it. I mean, is that something that you've worked on? Is that just simply doing a lot of these interviews as you've been a top-ranked amateur for a few years now? I mean, how are you so comfortable already in front of the camera, being able to speak and talk like you're already a professional golfer?
I think practice makes perfect. My first real public speaking experience, I ran for vice president my sophomore year of high school. And I remember it was about a 2 or 3 minute speech on why you should vote for Maverick McNealy for VP. And I remember by the end of the speech, I was so glad I didn't have two more lines to say, because it felt like my throat was closing up. I didn't know if I could talk for another 10 seconds. I was so nervous. But I think it's just practice. I don't know. But I also think that it was probably the best decision for my professional golf career to stay amateur for my junior and senior years. I think a lot of players might turn after kind of the sophomore year that I had. And I think that what I learned my junior and senior years of college, trying to live up to and play to expectations, both internal and external. I mean, there's, you know, it's going to be there. You can't tell yourself to not put pressure on yourself. It's just not something that works. You just have to learn how to deal with it. And I thought, you know, just the public speaking aspect of that was one of the many things that I learned, you know, some the hard way, some the easy way, my junior and senior years of high school, or of college, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you go from 19-year-old Maverick McNealy to 21-year-old Maverick McNealy, it's only 2 years, but, I mean, you're a completely different person. I'm sure you'd say the same thing. I mean, this is one of the things about golf, and I was going to ask you this a bit later, but 10 years ago, a 21-year-old turning professional wasn't expected to go out there and win. Now you are in a sense. I mean, you announced on GoStanford.com you are going to turn professional. I know you battled with that decision for a while, if you were going to play and go do business or if you were going to play golf. Now, as you get set to prepare to become a professional golfer, and you're doing it soon. I mean, it's a few weeks away from your first professional event. Is there pressure there to go out there and succeed quickly, knowing that there's the Spieths and the Justin Thomases and the Hideki Matsuyamas that are doing this stuff in their early 20s?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressures on the up-and-coming, just starting professional golfer. For one, You know, there's always self-imposed pressure. I want more than anything to have full status on the PGA Tour, and I'd be lying if I said that wasn't my goal by the end of 2018 is to have full status on the PGA Tour. But it's not easy, and those guys are the best in the world, and they're the best at it for a reason. They're really, really good. And but you know, there are a ton of other guys that have done that, and for every one that has made it that quickly, there are hundreds that haven't, and it's you have to look at it realistically. There's sponsors who you want to perform well for, and you know, who feel like they're taking a huge chance on you and a huge gamble on you, and you want to perform well for them. And then obviously there's just, you know, the fans, everyone that follows you, friends, family, who are all wishing you well. There's a lot of people rooting for you, but you know, to be completely honest, my game plan doesn't change. I play to win, and that's what excites me. That's what motivates me, is to get into that mental state where you're in the heat of the battle and you know you can't miss. That's what I live for. And you know, that my game plan doesn't change. I'm preparing to win the Safeway Open. And if I don't, you know, I'm not going to hold it against myself. It's quite honestly speaking, pretty unlikely, but that's what I'm preparing for. And, you know, I think that when you do set your sights high, and you can do some pretty cool things.
Yeah, I mean, number two player in the world. You mentioned it, and I'm going to tweet out the article from the Clubhouse account if you haven't read it yet. It's a great read, the thing you wrote for Go Stanford about turning professional. You're number two amateur in the world. You talked a lot about how you go from number two to 1,700 in the world as a professional, and this has been something that I feel like you've debated for a number of years. I mean, people have brought this up to you a lot. Are you going to turn professional? Are you going to turn professional? Why was the idea of pro golf something that seemed to weigh on you so much, considering the success you've had as an amateur and the success you've had at Stanford?
Well, to be completely honest, I really have enjoyed working, and I really enjoyed the work that I did in school and the real life applications of that. And I interned a couple weeks over the summer before college, during high school, at the company my dad started called Weigh-In in Denver. And I enjoyed it. I would want them to give me a task to do, and I'd want to do it so well that they'd want to give me something else to do. And that was really exciting for me, and getting better at something is really, really exciting and rewarding to me. And you know, I honestly didn't think until after my sophomore year that I'd ever be good enough to play professional golf. And, I also knew that I wanted to finish and, you know, finish my Stanford degree and play 4 years on the team there. And I owed that a lot to Coach Ray for the chance he took on me, giving me a spot when I basically wasn't even ranked. And then, but at the end of the day, like, I just really wanted to make sure I thought through the decision well. And my dad and I kind of came to the same conclusion. He wanted me to think through it. He wanted me to make the best decision possible in the way I went about it. But, you know, as long as I am 100% committed and don't look back, you know, there's no way I can make a bad decision. And so that's where I am right now. I've chosen professional golf, and I'm 100% committed to playing professional golf. And you know, I'm not going to look back or second guess or think that I should have done something else, because that's really the only way I can make it a bad decision.
Yeah, I had Stuart Hagestad on the Clubhouse following his great play at the Masters, and this is a guy that is not going to play professional golf. He's going to remain amateur, and he's going to have a job, and he's going to kind of do what you were thinking about doing. Did you have that conversation with him at all, either in the past months or during Walker Cup week, considering you guys kind of were thinking similar things?
Yeah, I mean, I had already made the decision by the time I started spending a lot more time with Stu, but I did talk a lot to Scott Harvey and Mike McCoy and Spider during the previous Walker Cup and the practice sessions, and kind of picked their brains a little bit, and you know, talked to them a lot about the Mid-Am circuit and the tournaments they play there, which is actually pretty amazing to get to play those kind of golf courses with that kind of competition. It's pretty awesome. So. But yeah, I mean, I think Stu is going to be wildly successful in whatever he does. And you know, he's applying to business school, and I wish him all the best with that. So we'll be following him too.
Yeah. You mentioned it. It's crazy. Really, not until we started doing this USGA events on Fox did I realize what amateur golf really looked like. And I'm talking about it, if you look at it, you know, from 1500 feet, these events they play, I mean, they play Seminole and they play, you know, Pine Valley. Yeah. And I mean, these golf courses and these events, they are professional level events for amateur golfers. I mean, if you had chosen to go in business and to do that, it wouldn't be that bad of a life considering all of the opportunities out there to still compete against great amateur players who, by the way, are unbelievably impressive.
Yeah. I mean, they get to play LACC too in the Thomas. I mean, it's an unbelievable stretch of golf they get to play. And like you said, the amateur game is getting so strong. And I think, I mean, there's just, yeah, like you said, it's just, it's a great option. It's a great alternative, but yeah, at the end of the day, I think that I want to see how good I can get, and I don't think I've reached my absolute potential in golf, and that's one of the most exciting things for me is to see how good I can be. And I think that were I to have chosen a different career path where I'm, you know, working in a job, that's what my main focus would be. I want to see how good I can get at my job, how good can I be at what I'm doing, and golf would be somewhat secondary. And I, you know, there's still a pretty strong golf fire burning that I want to see how far I can take.
Is there a particular thing when you watch the professional golfers, when you watch the FedEx Cup playoffs or pay attention to major championships, or even when you're out there competing? I know you haven't played a ton of professional golf in the sense as an amateur, but I mean, you've played in a U.S. Open. Is there something when you look at your game right now, is there a piece that you think you need to improve on, or do you feel like your game is pretty solid as you get set to go to the Safeway and beyond?
Yeah, it's amazing. There's so many different ways to do it. I've actually played 5 PGA Tour events, 3 majors, and a web event. So I've had quite the internship as an amateur before playing pro golf. But I think the best way to put it is when Tiger came to visit visit campus at Stanford my sophomore year. That was actually right after I won my first 2 events. I thrown into the whole being good at golf thing. He came to campus, and it was right after his first back surgery. He was in the weight room waiting on the doorstep at 5 a.m. for them to unlock it, just only crushing a huge lift for about 2.5 hours. And then by 8 o'clock, he was out ripping drivers at our facility. And he was actually incredibly generous with his time. He would, one of us would timidly go up and wait for him between shots and say, "Tiger, can I ask you a question?" And he'd start answering. And by the end, all of us were standing in a semicircle, and he was showing us shots and hitting shapes. And we're saying, "Tiger, hit the stinger on number 4 at Olympic." And he hit this low stinger 6-iron. It was so cool. And he was so generous with his time. But my biggest takeaway from him talking through what he did and his process wasn't that he was doing anything really different than what I was trying to do and that what most of our team was trying to do. He just did it so much better. He just did everything extremely well. He was extremely disciplined, and the level of focus and intensity was unlike anything I'd ever seen. So that actually gave me a lot of confidence in what I was doing to prepare and doing to improve. It's just that, you know, all the guys on tour do it so, so well, and they really understand what they need to do to play well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I mean, you've won 11 times at Stanford. I mean, you tied the most ever with Patrick Rogers and with Tiger. When you won 11, I mean, is there a relationship with him where he sent you a text, a congrats text, even a text where he was trash-talking you a bit? You better not get 12. I don't want you to beat my record. I mean, do you have that type of relationship with Tiger at all?
Not quite, but he, you know, I did get to play the at the Greenbrier 2 years ago, and I played the group in front of him on Saturday, which was pretty fun. And that was cool. But actually, after I won my first 2 events, Patrick Rogers shot me a text and said, "Slow down, don't beat my record too quickly."
He was nervous, man. He saw it coming.
I think my 9th win, I had a very back door tied first. He sent me a text. He said, "What, you can't win outright anymore? What's the deal?"
the lineage of the Stanford Cardinal golf team is pretty impressive. So you're a professional golfer now, and I can only assume you and your team and your agent have had people knocking at the door a lot. I mean, I would say you'd come off as a sponsor's dream in a sense. How has that process been like for a young man to now all of a sudden go meet with the club companies and sponsors and apparel? Do you have all that locked in, or are you still trying to figure certain things out?
I do have that locked in. Unfortunately, I can't let you know right now. I think if you saw my bag at LACC, it wouldn't be a shocker which direction I'm going club-wise. But, you know, I out of respect to my sponsors, I'll let them make that announcement, and that'll most likely be Tuesday of the Safeway. But yeah, I've actually really enjoyed the business side of me has really enjoyed understanding the business of sports marketing. And it's, to me, it sounded like 2 years ago, I would have said sports marketing. That's like a major that a lot of people take when they're trying to focus on sports. But now I have so much more of an appreciation for it and all that goes into it. And, I've really looked at professional golf a different way because of that. It's, you know, by virtue of signing those contracts, I'm now in the business of selling golf clubs. I'm now in the business of, selling shirts and pants and shoes. And I'm also in the business of developing relationships for any corporate sponsor. And that's actually really exciting for me and going to be a lot of fun. And I think you'll see when I do announce which brands and companies I'm privileged to align with, that it makes a lot of sense that, I think the engineering side of me, where I'm really, really interested and focused in making things as good as they possibly can be. Also the side where, I play my best from behind. I love to be a little bit of an underdog. And I actually won all my singles matches having trailed early in the match. And then finally, just a little bit of, kind of my management science and engineering degree coming through with a corporate sponsor. I think it'll make a lot of sense. And for me, finding corporate sponsors or club company or apparel companies that really align with who I am and are a lot more genuine was really important throughout this process.
Well, run us through your schedule over the next 6-8 months. I know you probably don't have it completely locked in, but I did notice that you've got some PGA Tour and sponsors invites set up for the next little bit. So what will your schedule look like as you get set for not just the end of 2017, but early 18 as well?
Yeah, so I've 6 of my 7 sponsors invites locked up on the PGA Tour, starting with the Safeway in Napa. And then I just moved to Vegas, Summerlin, Nevada. It's right on the outskirts of Vegas. So I'll be playing the Shriners Hospital for Children Open at TPC Summerlin 3 weeks after that. And then straight from there. So I'm actually technically an amateur still for 5 more days, until I can get the World Amateur Golf Ranking exemption in the second stage of Q School.
Okay.
So I'm not signing anything for another week or so. But, I'm exempt in the second stage, which I will most likely play at TPC Craig Ranch in Dallas. And then hopefully we'll I'm going to try and Monday qualify in Sea Island to see if I can earn another start. And then I'm hopefully playing final stage. And then starting in 2017, I'm playing the Farmers in San Diego, the AT&T Pebble Beach with my dad as my partner, which will be pretty fun. And then I'm playing AT&T Byron Nelson and the Colonial event as well. And so hopefully I either earn special exempt status by reaching this year's 150 through those 7 starts, or have some sort of status on the web that I can fill the second half of my season with.
You mentioned your dad. You're going to play with him at Pebble Beach. I read that he's mm-hmm. pretty solid player. What's Scott's handicap at right now?
He's about a 7. He says his handicap is his 3 kids and all of his work. But
it gets in the way, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He's a 7. Yeah. So, I mean, you guys, if he's a 7, I feel like that's the range at these things. Like, you can't have the 25 and you can't have the 2. You've got to have the guy that if he makes 5 pars on his stroke holes, you're going to get into it. I mean, that is what's so fun about the Pebble Beach week is, if your partner plays well, you can ride his back just like he could ride the professional's back as well. I'm sure it's something you guys are really looking forward to and get a chance to obviously play 3 of the best courses in the world as well.
Yeah, definitely. I've played so many NorCal Junior Tour events around Spyglass, and my dad's a member at MPCC, and Pebble's, I think, top 5 all time for me. I played that on my 16th birthday. I actually caddied for my dad at Pebble my freshman year of college. We just taken the red eye back from our college event in Hawaii, I landed and I had a phone call from my dad. It says, "Mav, we're paired with Phil in the third to last group at Pebble on Sunday. Do you want a caddy?" So after the red eye, I drove 2 hours down south and caddied for my dad at Pebble, which was really, really fun. So I'll be, I guess, one of the first people to have caddied and played in the event as a professional.
did Phil give you any great Phil moments during the round?
I'm sure. I think one of them was my dad said to Phil, "Dad, Phil." Dad had texted Phil, and he said, "Phil, you never responded to my text." He said, "Oh, wait, I got a different number." His number, and Dad came back and sat down and said, "Dad, you're officially cool now. That's awesome." And but the one shot I remember most was on number 7. It's about 115 yards downhill, and it's blowing into a pretty stiff breeze. And Phil pulls a 9-iron, and the pin's back right, and he launches this 9-iron like I would launch a Stinger 6-iron. It almost scrapes the front edge of the tee box, and it takes one hop and checks left to about 10 feet pin high. That was a pretty cool shot.
You were like, "Oh, I need to get that one. I got to find that one somewhere in the arsenal." So, you know, you've got Tiger and Patrick Rogers and Michelle Wee. I mean, you know, the list goes on from great players that have played golf at Stanford. Have they reached out to you at all, or have you reached out to any of them and just said, you know, advice for professional golf, anything you can say to do, anything you can say not to do? Have you had that conversation with any of those types of people as you get prepared?
Not really. To be honest, I think the two closest to me have been Patrick Rogers and Cameron Wilson, who I played with my freshman year. I also, Marco O'Meara has been fantastic. I played the group behind him at the Open Championship this summer. And he and I were similar in that we both hit it out of bounds right on the first shot of the tournament.
He was a kindred spirits when you both hit it out of bounds.
Exactly. But he's been really, really helpful. And, it all just comes down to patience. It's really easy, like you said, to look ahead and set all these expectations, but you really just have to go play golf and just stick to what you've been doing and just try and do it really, really well. And hopefully it all worked out eventually. I'm lucky at Stanford and through the Stanford Golf Network, there's no shortage of people that can help out. And I also have to say Coach Ray has been fantastic with all the great players he's seen come through Stanford the last 14 years. And he played on the team with Noda, Tiger, Joel Kreibel, Will Yanagisawa, all these guys. He's seen his fair share of great players too, and offers a lot of valuable insight.
Well, Mav, I appreciate the time. I think I speak for the golfing community when I say thank you for deciding to play professional golf. We're excited to see what will happen over the next few years with you. I mean, obviously, you know, the talent is there, and it'll be I think the head is there too. You sure seem like a mature 21-year-old. It's really strange to me. I can't even imagine what I was doing at 21, but you seem to have your head on straight. So good luck over the next few months. Enjoy it. And hopefully in 6, 7, 8 months, we'll catch back up and see how professional golf's going.
Sounds good, Shane. I'm starting to enjoy being interviewed by you because it usually means something cool or fun has happened. So hopefully we can make this happen again.
Listen, when you win your first event, don't forget about the little people, and I'll call you and we can recap the win and you can talk about how awesome it is to be PGA Tour champion. I appreciate the time and good luck at the Safeway.
Sounds great. Thanks.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Many thanks to my buddy John Hodges. Many thanks to Maverick McNeely. And big thanks to Ogio, of course. Make sure you check out Ogio.com for all their products. And, of course, follow that Clubhouse Twitter account, at the Clubhouse Pod, for our big Ogio giveaway. You get a new golf bag, a new backpack, and a new travel bag. That is a great package. And trust me, you'll love all of it from Ogio, OGIO.com. Check that out. And if you are going to buy something, use the Clubhouse with no spaces to save 20% at Ogio. That is 20% off. Bam, right off the top. A great deal there. Thanks to those people at Ogio. They are unbelievable. And thank you, guys. Hope you have an unbelievable weekend. Hope you get some golf in. And we will check back with you as we get set for the Tour Championship. Final event of 2017 is coming up next week. Have a great week. Play some golf. Make some birdies.